All right, let's head over to the Zoom line where we have the executive coach for the Real Life Rockstars, Joe Sinnott. Of course, Real Life Rockstars, a lot of times they're geologists, and Joe Sinnott makes a good portion of his living being an executive coach to those individuals, petroleum geologists, of course, across C-suite USA, and also even some small businesses from time to time that need a little bit of a rock star treatment. So Joe Sinnott, how are you doing today of Witting Partners and the Energy Detox Podcast?
I'm doing just fine, Jason. How are you today?
Not too bad. I was going to try to get your intro done in under one sentence, but that's impossible when you're as busy as a man like yourself. So how's things going out on the East Coast there? You're not quite on the East Coast, but you're out on the eastern side of the United States, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area, of course, home of the Marcellus, Utica, and Appalachian Basin. Is that right?
Sure. You can use those all interchangeably. The moral of the story is, yeah, we produce a lot of gas from a lot of different layers of the earth. Again, we'll tie back to the geologist who can actually explain that in better detail than I can. But yeah, here in Pittsburgh, although I am from the true East Coast, though, Jason. So I know sometimes, you know, it's all relative, right? People will lump all of Pennsylvania in, forgetting that it's, you know, 300 plus miles wide. But, you know, I am from New Jersey. So in the shadow of what used to be Giants Stadium. So I know the Giants are coming off of their nice big victory this weekend, upset victory over the Vikings. So I won't ask you how you're doing after that loss, but I do need to make a nod to my East Coast roots, if you will.
I think a lot of people, not to talk football here, but, you know, of course, I was born in Minneapolis, and I've been a Washington Redskins Commanders fan my entire life since I was 4 years old, because I always liked to play the Indians in Cowboys and Indians, which is now Native Americans. And my friend Murray Proust, who lived down the block at age four, would like to play the Cap Guns Cowboys. So I preferred the bow and arrow. He preferred the Cap Guns. One Thanksgiving when I was 4 years old, the Cowboys versus Redskins was on TV, and I picked the Redskins ever since. It's been a hard Daniel Snyder couple decades. Let's just put it that way. I follow the Redskins now, the Commanders, but being around Minnesota, of course, by osmosis, working in the media, I have to follow the Vikings or I'll get escorted right out of the state. And that, by the way, the state is a regional area, not the drunken Sconnies over in Wisconsin. No, no, we don't. The Packers have their own fans. We have our fans here. And it's interesting, in the Bakken in North Dakota, half of them are Denver Bronco fans. And then the other half are Minnesota Vikings fans. You got one or two Seattle fans because we're kind of the gateway to the West. But yeah, both of my predictions, San Diego Chargers, Minnesota Vikings, I made impromptu-ly. They got ousted in the first round. Couple of upsets, I guess, because the Chargers had that game wrapped up and they found every way to lose that game. Which brings me, Joe Sinnott, to what I want to ask you about today. I'm a failure. I've failed already in my New Year's resolutions. I've failed in some businesses that I've had to kind of shut down in the last year and reinvent and redo and everything else. I've even failed in my family in some ways, you know, because I'm not quite bringing in the income that I once brought in before as the inflation prices are going up. So I got to be honest, I'm getting a little bit finger pointing at me around the household, Joe. How do I get out of this failure spiral that I seem to be in, Mr. Rockstar? How's that for a Monday morning question for you, coming off of a couple of my, hey, my gambling picks are gone. I don't have that money coming in, Joe.
Oh boy. I thought we were just going to talk sports for 20 or 30 minutes. Yeah. We got a little bit deeper there, Jason, but
yeah.
I guess the bigger question when, you know, that you're not the first person to pose that, right? Is, yeah, how do I overcome failure, loss, whatever? It's, you know, what are your ultimate goals? What are you driving towards, right? A lot of people get caught up, especially this time of year, right? You know, we're on the heels of a new year still, a couple weeks in, and it's easy to get down, right? It's, oh, by now I would have expected to do X, Y, Z, or I'm failing in whatever it is. And it's like, well, all right, well, you know, what is your ultimate destination, right? Let's not get caught up in the minutia. And I know some of the minutia can feel big, right? When people you know, screw up in a job or have some family issue or, yeah, bet their life savings on the Vikings and, you know, who go on to lose, whatever the case is. But at the end of the day, it's sort of a, well, so what? Does that really matter in the grand scheme of things? So I think that's the, I mean, that's the first answer to Jason. We will dive as deep as we want to on this conversation, but that's really the first response is, do you have a sense of what you're ultimately after? Because if you don't, you fall into the trap that a lot of the folks I work with fall into, which is getting caught up on relatively intermediate things, not necessarily unimportant, but things that might not be as important as you think they are in terms of getting towards your ultimate goal. So when you talk, you know, you talk a little bit about finances, about business, about family, you know, what is your ultimate vision for all of those things?
So it's interesting you bring that up, because I don't know if we've talked about this before, but you and I, of course, we have talked about my cancer survival and a few of my family things. So one thing about this podcast or interview or whatever we want to call it, we tend to get somewhat personal and family oriented, because quite honestly, if you have a car payment or you have a mortgage or you have insurance or you have a student loan, you are a small business because you need to cash flow your life. Now, you might not be, you know, Microsoft, or you might not be Dixie Donuts, but you're still a small business in this grand scheme of cash flow. And when I took a look at when I became a single father and I got full custody of the child when the mother was living a couple thousand miles away and I thought I had cancer, I really had to redo my priorities. So I actually sat down and wrote down a list, Joe. Number one, my son's health and well-being. Number two, my relationship with my son. Number three, my health. And number four, my job. It's very difficult to live in a world where your job is your fourth priority when most people view you and label you and even base your reputation on your job, Joe. That's a tough thing to be in nowadays when you want to be a family or you want to try to survive or you want to just try to reinvent your life. There's a lot of people trying to reinvent their life right now, and it's hard to stop that roller coaster. It's hard to stop that merry-go-round, if you will. So it's my question to you is that in a world that bases so much image and success based on your occupation and job, how are those people who are going to try to focus on their family and their health and some of those non-career type things? How do you navigate through that? That's a really hard question. And by the way, there's really no right answer on this.
Well, first of all, you're right. There's no universal answer, but
that's a better way to put it. Yes.
Well, and keep this in mind, of course, Jason, you know, I'm in the job of asking questions. So I don't purport to have answers. I'm not coming into companies or working with individuals, you know, as a true consultant or advisor. My job is to ask questions, sometimes dumb questions. And that, you know, my response to your question to me is basically, hey, is that fourth priority, is your job, whatever it happens to be, is it really an end goal? Or again, is it intermediate? So case in point, you know, a lot of people I work with, when you really get into the weeds, it's, well, no, I mean, at the end of the day, I do see my job as a means to supporting my family or to making the world a better place or to, you know, having enough money or extra money to be able to make a difference in the community or, you know, to support my church or whatever the case is. And again, when you frame it that way, it can just change how people view that job, view that role. And in some cases, in many cases, it helps them actually do better at their job, right? It helps them become more focused. And I'll, you know, again, we're, like you said, we'll dive into the personal here quite often in these conversations. And even in my own life, it's easy to say, hey, you know, how many ways are my kids holding me back, right? You know, all the time and the energy and everything else, you know, how much more successful would I be if it weren't for my kids? And then it's just, you know, you realize how silly of a thought is, because it's, you know what? I don't think I would be as successful as I am if it weren't for my kids and my wife and having that motivation and having that focus and saying, you know, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. And again, everybody's different. Everybody's wired differently, but that's what you need to get after. That's, you know, that it's that end goal. It's that ultimate purpose. I'll throw another example out there. Again, it's New Year's. I've had multiple conversations with people about New Year's resolutions and things like that. And a lot of people, right, you know, they want to be healthy. They want to go to the gym. They want to exercise. They want to eat right. All of those things. You say, well, why? Is it just to be healthy? And people might stop there and say, yeah, but ultimately, at least, you know, I'll, and I'll say, this is for me and it's for other people. Why do you want to be healthy? Well, in your case, Jason, it's so you could be there for your son, right? I am sure that a big piece of surviving cancer, pushing through, beating the odds, was so that you could be there for your son. Again, I don't want to make assumptions. I'll turn it over to you, but that's what you got to get after, because then you view those perceived failures in, you know, not eating as healthy or, you know, quitting drinking or whatever the case is, you view them in a different light. And sometimes it makes it easy. Anyway, I'll stop there.
No, you're right.
More experience in this, but.
No, because what ends up happening is that you end up having, you know, impact and a ripple and, you know, the ESG of the supply chain, if you will, you know, type of a thing. Because when I sat down and wrote down my list, those top three things that I had were so important to me, because I truly am a family first guy, that when it came down to my job, like I said, it was like, I didn't even think of that until I was on number four. I went, oh, I suppose I should put my job in there because I need to figure out a way to sustain those top three priorities I have of my son's mental and physical well-being, my son and my relationship, and my health. And so when I looked at that, I thought, I got to fund that somehow, because I just wasted most of my money fighting the medical industry and all these other things. And so when you have other things going on in your life, like when I went a year without sugar, that was a full-time job. Joe, I got to tell you, I went a year without coffee and I thought that was hard. When I went a year without sugar, I think I could have climbed Mount Everest and that would have been easier than going a year without sugar. It is in everything, man. I tell you, pretty soon all I was eating was salad with a crushed lemon over it, because everything's got sugar in it. So that's my point, is that when you try to reinvent, you somehow don't understand how there's some unexpected consequences and time sucks and just new experiences. So whether it's a job or whether it's trying to fight cancer or trying to navigate through being a single parent, life changes. And when life changes, it's hard to really budget time. What type of advice would you have for somebody, like I said, job, somebody fighting health reasons, somebody going through a custody battle, whatever their challenge in life is? How do you kind of guide them through that time? Because honestly, we all have the same amount of time and it all comes down to choices.
Yeah. Well, the first step, and again, this is about as simple as it gets, but it's necessary, is to write out those 168 hours that everybody has in a given week. Write it out. Take some of those themes that you just described, right? Those big buckets, you know, time for your son, you know, time for work, you know, time for yourself, exercise, all those things. Identify those handful of themes and then schedule them out. And this exercise, and again, I do this a lot with individuals. I do this a lot with companies. You can call it, you know, some people will call it the ideal week, which again, there's a lot of different self-help gurus out there that have some version of it. But the idea is simple, Jason. Schedule out what your week would look like ideally. Now, we all know, as you just said, things are always going to pop up. You know, it's almost laughable, especially working in the energy industry, to talk about an ideal week, because things are always, you know, going amiss or wrong or whatever. There's constantly fires to fight. But do you at least have a starting point? Do you at least have what things would look like if you can control everything? How many hours would you sleep? When would you sleep? When would you eat? When would you have some time to yourself? When would you exercise? If you're talking from a business standpoint, what days, what times of each day are best to connect with your team, to have those, you know, employee sit downs? What days are best to do the menial tasks, the accounting type stuff? Again, actually sitting down and saying, well, what would this look like first? And then going back through and making decisions and adjusting and layering in reality. A lot of people get overwhelmed, Jason, because, you know, life can be overwhelming, but they don't even know what the you know, what the ideal would be. How the heck do you ever even intend to approach an ideal situation, life, whatever, if you don't even know what that looks like? So that's the first thing that I do with a lot of people, is getting that out there and actually understanding what those buckets are and then trying to layer them in.
When it comes to the specifically the energy industry, it's there's a lot of uncertainty no matter where you go, and even in the boardroom, because it's very difficult to go against the grain during these times, because a lot of people are concerned about if they say the wrong thing, they might lose their job or get laid off, because you can't turn on the news without hearing about layoffs these days and increased prices. And so there's kind of this walking on eggshells type of thing happening right now across, I would say, small business and corporate business. It just seems like it's there. You can feel the energy. You can listen in the words that people are describing if you listen close enough. Talk to me a little bit about how to kind of navigate through that, because a lot of people are trying to avoid writing down those lists that you and I just talked about. They want to keep their job. They don't want to reinvent themselves. So this is kind of a new type of failure. This is failure prevention, Joe. This is where that goes. But talk to me a little bit about what's going on in the boardrooms and in the C-suite executives, and even some of the small businesses where there is a little bit of eggshells, either from saying the wrong thing, making the wrong move. Do we change our name from this to energy? You know, if you've noticed, a lot of oil and gas companies are called energy companies now. So there are changes happening in some areas, major changes. In other areas, they won't budge. In fact, right now, I just got a press release. Wyoming introduces bill to phase out electric vehicles by 2035. So there's still some pushback, and we're not all on the same page yet. So talk to me about how to walk through those eggshells a little bit.
Well, when I'm working with individuals, and again, it could be at any level of the company, even, you know, the highest rung of a company many times has to report to, of course, you know, either shareholders or board of directors or whatever the case is. So at any level of the company, the first step is similar to what we just talked about, Jason, is identifying what the ultimate purpose is and then working backwards. Because a lot of the stuff that people get hung up on or that generate fear and have them, again, walking on eggshells, a lot of those things don't actually matter. You know, they don't affect the bottom line. But we live in such an age of distractions, especially with all of the ESG stuff and the net zero stuff, where, you know, things get a life of their own. They become seen as an end in and of themselves, when the reality is they're not, or they shouldn't be. So if you see that, and that's what's generating maybe some of the fear that, hey, you know, I don't really want to, you know, call a spade here and say that this doesn't make any sense. This does not help the company in the long run. If you're in that position, the first step is determining whether you can ask, hey, how does this connect to the bottom line? Again, in whatever tactful way you want to do it. You know, how does this help us generate money, to be blunt? So that's that angle you want to take, Jason, is to slow down and try to connect whatever it is that you want to speak up about. Can you connect it to the ultimate goal? To the bottom line? Can you ask questions that help other people see how disconnected certain actions and investments might be to the bottom line? That, again, I'm speaking sort of high level here, but mm-hmm. that's the approach, is identify where those connections are weak. And in some cases, if you're taking that approach, you might discover that the connections are there. So again, I don't want to take this, hey, you know, just because you're fearful, you don't want to speak up, and you know, you're right, everybody else is wrong. By taking that approach and saying, well, how does this impact the bottom line, you might discover that it does. You might discover that some silly advertising campaign that you think is a complete waste of money, you know, somebody has actually thought through it and has made the economic case. And you walk away saying, well, cool, I'm glad I asked the questions and I didn't go into this, you know, with some false sense that either, yeah, I need to light a fire under people and risk getting fired or whatever, or keep my mouth shut. You can kind of strike that balance there and start by asking questions.
We talked about kind of that first step, you know, sitting down, writing things down, and just, you know, basically taking a step back and analyzing your life and finding out your priorities and et cetera. Let's talk about the specifics here for a second. And let's use something that is probably in your neck of the woods, a very hot topic right now, which is natural gas and stoves. Now, we can get into the political side of things all day long, which is, in the 90s and 2000s, the government forced everybody to go into a natural gas furnace. They forced everybody to go to natural gas stoves. They did it through credits. In some cities, they flat out forced it. So the government steered everybody into the natural gas world. And now they're trying to rip it out from them by going through the stoves and a number of different things. I think there's a study on asthma or something. It's not a double blind study. It's a special interest study. And so that's what I've seen in the news. When you're talking about marketing, when you're talking about representing your company, when we talk about the world of social media, we're getting into a world now where you can't even buy a cup of coffee at Starbucks or Black Rifle without being shamed and trolled online, that type of thing. Talk to me on that individual basis where, you know, your company might want you to represent them, but maybe you don't want to be involved with the politicalness of this type of thing. And so it becomes a very much a sticky wicket, because as much as you want to represent your company, maybe it doesn't really represent you. And so in the world of social media, where you're expected to do certain things, this has become increasingly an issue. Because you know what reminds me of, Joe? Very similar to where if you wanted to get ahead, you had to go on the smoke break with the boss. And if you didn't go on the smoke break with the boss, it didn't seem like your ideas ever got heard. We're kind of getting into that intangible, you know, where it's hard to really prove anything, but everybody knows what's going on. So I'm not sure if you follow me at all, Joe, on that, but I think that's a little bit of a problem on the social media side and trying to advance your career and your personal side too. So we might be getting too far in the weeds here. I don't know.
Oh, I'm not afraid. I'm an engineer, Jason. I'm never afraid to dive into the weeds and overcomplicate things and get lost. That's all part of the brand, if you will. But in terms of promoting a brand, perhaps, or a message that you don't want to or you're not comfortable with, the first thing, and again, none of these things are foolproof. It's all situational, which is why I like working one-on-one with folks. But the first thing is, you know, if you were asked to again, promote something on social media or to go out and give a talk somewhere or whatever, to wear some patch on your clothes that you don't quite agree with, then the first thing is you could say, well, what are all the ways I could support this mission? You know, maybe you're half on board. You just don't want to do it publicly for some reason, whatever the case is, without having to get defensive, have that question, right? You know, what are all the ways to do whatever the company wants you to do by going out there publicly and saying something or doing something or wearing something? You know, how else can I support this mission? Which can do two things. One, you know, provide another avenue to, again, we'll use a smoke break example. You know, what are all the ways to connect with the boss that don't require me breathing in something that I would argue is probably a little bit more harmful than, you know, cooking eggs in the morning on your, you know, your natural gas stovetop? You know, what are all the ways to connect with this person? Well, maybe he actually likes whiskey after work and you can, you know, go join him for a drink after work, whatever the heck the case is, right? That's the first step. Again, is it foolproof? Absolutely not, Jason, but it's a great way to ask an open-ended question that's not going to cause any harm, right? You're not coming out and saying no. That's where a lot of people, they get clammed up, right? They think it's a yes, no scenario. I'm asked to do something I don't want to do. The pressure, I got to say yes. And if I say no, it could be a career limiting move. Who knows what's going to happen? Take a step back and say, all right, again, what are all the different options here? What are all the ways we can have a win-win here? And a lot of people, and especially in the energy industry, which is go, 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 a lot of pressure, fast pace, all those things, it can be very difficult to stop, breathe, and take the time to ask that question, which is, again, why I love what I do, because I'm there as a lifeline. I'm there to help. You know, people have this scenario, they're wrestling with this. Give me a call, and again, 30 seconds sometimes, I can ask a question like that, and oh, well, I never thought about that, Joe. So anyway, there's my attempt at answering what I think you were asking, Jason.
What's going on out there in the Marcellus Utica Appalachian Basin when it comes to natural gas and these this kind of this new PR campaign against it? Are you hearing much out there? Is it I always find it interesting because is it Susquehanna County? Is that how you pronounce it?
Susquehanna.
Susquehanna County is like the number one in the nation for natural gas. And they're like one of the top in the world, even type of a thing. And it's this little county and all this natural gas comes out of there. And is it Coterra is the name of the company now? Or what are the companies that are primarily involved with the natural gas extraction?
So Susquehanna is mostly Coterra. And then when you move down to Southwest PA, closer to where I'm located, that's where you have EQT is the biggest natural gas producer in the United States. So they are primarily focused down here in Southwest PA, Northern West Virginia, also some in Eastern Ohio. And then you've got the likes of Range Resources, CNX, another big one around here, Antero, mostly West Virginia, but again, another big player, of course. So a lot of different players, but yeah, Coterra is, I believe, still the biggest producer up there in Susquehanna County.
So it's kind of like this, where sometimes when you have a region that is basically powered by a certain industry, sometimes some of these conversations don't make it in there. And I'll give you an example here in the Midwest, because we're farming all the time. And so farming was the number one industry for deaths in the United States for like 100 years, but you could never report that. You could never report the amount of subsidies farmers got around town. In fact, the Fergus Falls newspaper tried it once in the 80s and lost 75% of their advertising within the next week. So no other newspaper tried to ever print subsidies to farmers ever again in this area. So, I mean, there's certain conversations that just don't make it because, you know, the people, they don't want to hear it. And that's not a negative. It's just kind of the way it is. It's just, you know, through a lack of different reasons for better or worse. Is there any conversation going on out there with, you know, boots on the ground, either at the cafes or at the executive level when it comes to this new kind of natural gas within the stoves and this kind of new rhetoric that seems to be making it through the media, Joe?
I don't know what the cafe conversations look like, Jason. You know, certainly all of the big players, all of the operators out here have, you know, pretty substantial community relations teams that are out there, that are there making a difference, that are trying to identify what actually matters to the communities, right? Not just coming in and assuming what the communities in which they operate actually need or want, but actually having those conversations so that, you know, they're making a direct impact. So that, you know, the benefits, the second, third, fourth degree benefits of natural gas development really do impact the people that are sitting in those cafes. I'm not part of those conversations necessarily, Jason, but I will say that, you know, one big thing here in Western PA that has been a hot topic over the last several years is the Shell cracker plant. So Shell, you know, big behemoth Shell, they just started up a cracker plant. So making polyethylene, you know, basically the feedstock for plastics and lots of different things that can be manufactured with the elements that are produced from, you know, ethane and natural gas, and, you know, sparing you all the details, this is a multi-billion dollar investment that Shell made in this region that's now up and running, that had lots of jobs that were involved in the creation of this plant, and that there's lots of jobs now that will continue. So, you know, that's been a real conversation here, because, you know, there's this big behemoth of a facility here in Western PA that's made an impact. It definitely was helped. It was spurred upon, if you will, by some tax credits and things like that. So yeah, that's absolutely a conversation. It's out there openly. I've seen lots of good balanced conversations about the benefits and the cons of incentivizing companies like Shell to come to this region. You're having those conversations now with all of the hydrogen money that's dangling out there from the federal government. So, you know, those conversations are real, because you got to put those facilities somewhere, right, Jason? And the question is, well, you know, what do they do? What's the purpose of it? All this hydrogen stuff. You know, I think your average person, you know, what do they know about hydrogen, right? Myself included, right? It's like, all right, well, you know, I know you got the Hindenburg. That's not a good thing. You know, I know that, you know, hydrogen from a molecular standpoint is in a lot of things. I think water has some hydrogen in it, but, you know, your average person is saying, well, what's the story with all these plants they're talking about and this new hydrogen economy? What does that even mean? And I think, you know, the companies that are being proactive, that are actually having these conversations now in those cafes, are setting themselves up for success when, you know, some new infrastructure is inevitably put in place. So again, you know, maybe a long answer for somebody who's not directly involved in these conversations, Jason, but I do see evidence of companies that are proactively getting out there and making sure that, you know, once again, the, you know, the story isn't hijacked from, you know, those who are against development and progress and innovation and technology and all of those things.
So it's not a Shale company. It's a Shell. So it's Shell, right? Shell, the big behemoth, top three oil company, not Shale. Okay. I wrote that down wrong.
Are they still Royal Dutch Shell? Didn't they do a little bit of rebranding or something?
They did too. Just like British Petroleum, they rebranded too. So, and it's not a cracker plant. So you're not making crackers out there. So it's cracking it up. It's not like cracking the crab legs. Okay. I just got to make sure I get that down. So it's not Triscuit crackers. All right. So, and that's actually kind of a big deal out there, that type of thing. How about the pipeline? Is there any advancements on either Dominion pipeline or maybe a new pipeline or just any activity out there when it comes to that? Sorry for the pop quiz here.
Oh, that's fine. Well, the answer when it comes to pipelines is no progress. The biggest story is MVP, Mountain Valley Pipeline, which is owned or I guess it's owned, whatever assets, it might not be flowing, but there's a couple billion dollars of investments that are owned by Equitrans Midstream here. And that's the one that has made the biggest news. That's the one that Senator Joe Manchin has been trying to save, if you will, or to push across the finish line. So, but no, you very easy answer to that question, Jason. No meaningful progress on pipelines here in Appalachia.
All right, Joe Sinnott, the host of the Energy Detox podcast, as well as the executive coach for the Real Life Rockstars. One final question. And what's the best way for people to get in touch with you, whether they want to ask some advice, maybe they want to just follow you on one of your social media sites, maybe they want to check out your podcast, or you know what, maybe they want to hire you for some business. How can somebody get in touch with you in a variety of different ways?
Sure. Well, LinkedIn's always one of the easier methods there. So always happy to have a conversation on LinkedIn. And, you know, I'm fairly active there. So try to share some occasional helpful things based on the work that I do that I think might be, you know, somewhat universal or relevant to my audience. Another good way is just heading on over to wittingpartners.com, WITTING partners. And from there, again, you can find more information about what I do, how I do it. You can navigate from there to the podcast, The Energy Detox, which you can also find on any of your favorite podcasting platforms or Google or anywhere else. So all roads can lead some way, shape, or form to the world of Witting Partners and the executive coaching that I do, focused again on the energy industry.